We'll see you again on Monday morning.
This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad made his first televised address since the onset of last week's deadly earthquake that killed thousands of people in the northern part of the country. He said Thursday that the scale of the disaster and the things that must be done are much greater than available resources. A boy was pulled from earthquake rubble in Hatay, Turkey, in the early hours of Friday morning after surviving for 260 hours. Rescue teams worked through the night, holding lights and filming the rescue and applauding as the youngster was lifted to safety on a stretcher. The quake has killed at least 36,187 people in southern Turkey. Authorities in neighboring Syria have reported 5,800 deaths, a figure that has changed little in recent days. Neither Turkey nor Syria have said how many people are still missing. Michigan State Police said Thursday that the suspect in this week's Michigan State University shootings carried with him a note indicating he felt slighted by former co-workers and others. It was a possible clue to a motive for a shooting that left three students dead and five others injured at the college late on Monday. A police spokesman told reporters at a news briefing Thursday that officials aren't sure what prompted 43-year-old Anthony Dwayne McRae to open fire on the university campus. McRae died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound after he was later confronted by police. He had no known connection to the university. And two people died Thursday in clashes between anti-junta protesters and security forces in Guinea, according to the municipal official. This is VOA News. Another disappointing inflation report has thumped Wall Street. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports on the results.
Stocks fell by the most in 4 weeks following more evidence that high inflation is staying stickier than expected. The S&P dropped 1.4% after a report said inflation at the wholesale level slowed by less last month than economists had forecast. It echoed a report on prices at the consumer level from earlier this week that suggested inflation isn't cooling as quickly and as smoothly as hoped. The Dow was down 431 points or 1.3%, while the Nasdaq dropped 1.8%. Stocks have been churning recently as worries about persistently high inflation could push the Federal Reserve to get even more aggressive on interest rates. While higher rates can drive down inflation, it can also put pressure on investment prices and raise the risk of a serious recession. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Doctors declared U.S. President Joe Biden, who is 80 years old, healthy and fit for duty on Thursday after a physical examination that included removing a lesion from his chest and declaring him free of symptoms of long COVID after he tested positive last year for the coronavirus. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
As you just mentioned, the president has his physical this morning. It was very much the exam was straightforward. And as you all saw, he returned to the White House to get back to work.
The exam was closely watched as Biden prepares for his expected run for a second term in the presidency in 2024. The UK's main opposition leader, Keir Starmer, met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv on Thursday. The Labour Party leader met Zelensky after a visit to Irpin and Bucha on the capital's outskirts, where numerous atrocities, including killings, were documented in the aftermath of the Russian withdrawal. The United States is imposing visa restrictions on five people and seven family members related to street gangs and criminal organizations in Haiti. This, according to Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Thursday. In a statement, he said the action sends a clear message of the United States' continued commitment to root out corruption and impact the behavior of bad actors whose influence underpins the lawlessness in Haiti. The State Department also announced Thursday that it condemns Nicaragua's decision to strip nationality from 94 of its citizens and the revocation of citizenship from 222 political prisoners that Managua released last week. Colombia and Venezuela on Thursday signed an agreement to revive trade between the two countries. This happened during a ceremony on a border bridge. Both the Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, and Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro, signed the document. More at our website, voanews.com. From Washington, I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Friday, February 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. promises more assistance to Ukraine as the war grinds to its one-year mark.
Officials here in Washington, and I would say Ukrainian officials, would both agree that the United States has managed to keep its commitment to Ukraine in providing it with the assistance that it needs.
Australia sends extra military surveillance aircraft and ships to boost border protection efforts.
The new deployment of additional patrol ships comes as the left-of-centre government this week gave about 19,000 refugees on temporary visas the right to stay permanently.
And the United Nations launches a $1 billion appeal to help survivors of Turkey's devastating earthquake. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia's invasion of Ukraine a year ago brought death, destruction and hardship to the country and awakened fears of a new Cold War. NATO says the February 24 attack resulted in more than 8 million Ukrainians fleeing their country in what was the greatest exodus of refugees Europe had witnessed since World War. The U.S. pledged continuing support to Kyiv as it struggles to hold the Russian advance. As the war grinds to a one-year mark next week, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob on how the U.S. administration has fulfilled its promises to assist Ukraine defend itself against Russian forces.
Officials here in Washington, and I would say Ukrainian officials, would both agree that the United States has managed to keep its commitment to Ukraine in providing it with the assistance that it needs. You can see that with just recently, the United States announced an additional $1.75 billion in the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative funds for air defense capabilities, counter drones, and more. They have promised them a Patriot battery. Ukrainians are training now in the United States to get that Patriot battery to defend their skies. And the United States hasn't just focused on its own support. The United States has also been pushing NATO allies to support Ukraine as well. And you have seen NATO allies as a whole come to the defense of Ukraine. Estonia, for example, I was just there, and the Estonian defense minister was telling me that they have spent a whopping 1% of their GDP just on assistance to Ukraine. And they've spent about 3% of their GDP this year on self-defense. That's a huge number, because if you recall, just a few years ago, the United States was trying to get NATO allies to commit to 2%. They're over that already. And so it just shows how serious this war is to everyone in NATO and how they want Ukraine to win. Because in Estonia especially, they look at Ukraine and say, if Russia succeeds in Ukraine, we, neighboring Russia, could be next. So it's very, very important for allies, especially along the border with Russia, to support Ukraine.
From the perspective of experts and, of course, the Pentagon, as the world marks 1 year since Russia invaded Ukraine, where do they see this war headed?
Well, U.S. officials have been clear that they see this becoming a very long war should Ukraine not gain any momentum in the next few months. And it's not just here at the Pentagon. We've heard that from Estonia officials today. Secretary Austin was in Estonia, and a key leader in Estonian defense there was saying that if this war is not solved at this moment where it is, there is going to be a bigger war. And the concern for a lot of officials that have studied war is that they're at a point right now, the Russians and the Ukrainians, where it's a very slow back and forth. Instead of taking a city in a matter of a few days, we're talking about taking a block or two in a matter of a few days, and then having the opposing side come and retake that block a couple of days later. Very slow, a lot of casualties. And that's where Russia has an advantage. They're a bigger nation, so they have more people to put into the fight. Whether or not those people will go, or whether or not they will stand up to their government and say, we do not want this war and we do not want to go, is yet to be seen. But for now, the concern is making sure that Ukraine can make the gains it needs to end this war now, so there won't be more and more death.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington, D.C. More than 100 members of Ukrainian military are in Poland for intense training on the German-made Leopard 2 battle tanks. Ukrainian leaders say the tanks promised by Western allies 3 weeks ago will help save lives and play a key role in the fight against Russian forces. Miroslava Gongadze has more from an army base camp in Poland.
At this army base in Svetoshov, Poland, about 100 Ukrainian troops brought in from the front line in their homeland are undergoing intense training on the advanced German-made Leopard 2 tanks provided by Western allies. They are working side by side with training instructors from Canada, Norway, and Poland. The Ukrainian troops, who had been fighting in the Donetsk and Luhansk regions, are training 10 hours a day, including weekends. Instead of the usual 3 months, officials say the Ukrainians will be ready to take these tanks to the battlefield in a little more than a month. Ukrainian Army Major Vadim Khodak is leading the training and says his troops are poised to learn quickly.
Мої солдати мають бойовий досвід. Вони не прийшли з вулиці. Вони деякий час воюють уже на танках на наших, і тому вивчати даний танк їм вже набагато легше.
Khodak says these tanks will be key on the battlefield.
На даний час нам дуже бракує бронетехніки. І я сподіваюся, що коли ми прийдемо з цією технікою на передову, вона врятує дуже багато життів нашим солдатам, а також приблизить нас до перемоги.
The first delivery of 14 battlefield-ready tanks as first step is planned as soon as next month. Leopard 2 tanks are seen as a vital modern military vehicle that would booster Kyiv's forces as the war with Russia approaches the one-year mark.
European partners plan to send 2 Leopard 2 tanks battalions to Ukraine. There are around 2,000 Leopard 2 vehicles spread across Europe. Officials say they expect the first delivery of 14 battlefield-ready tanks as a first step next month. Polish President Andrzej Duda visited the training site on Monday and praised Ukrainians fighting against Russia.
Zarazem, proszę Państwa, broniąc nas wszystkich, broniąc także Europy przed odrodzonym rosyjskim imperializmem, a rosyjską twarz imperialną znamy doskonale z naszej historii, nigdy więcej z bliska widzieć jej nie chcemy. Dzisiaj przed tym bronią nas właśnie nasi sąsiedzi z Ukrainy, jesteśmy im za to wdzięczni.
Duda added, Poland is offering support for the Ukrainians and call on Western allies to send more equipment to Ukraine in weeks to come. Mirosława Gongadze, VOA News, Svetoshov, Poland.
Thank you, Mirosława. And President Joe Biden said on Thursday there's no evidence there have been a sudden increase in the number of objects in the skies over America, explaining after a Chinese spy balloon was shut down, radar was enhanced to pick up more slow-moving objects. And from Washington, VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman has details.
Speaking at the White House, President Biden said the U.S. intelligence community is still analyzing information about the 3 objects the U.S. military shot down over Alaska, Canada, and a U.S. northern lake, but they don't appear to have been put aloft by China or any other country. Those encounters occurred after what officials here regard as a Chinese spy balloon was downed with a missile after it traversed the United States, an action Biden says he ordered to send a clear message to Beijing.
The violation of our sovereignty is unacceptable. We'll act to protect our country, and we did.
Biden added he plans to speak with Chinese President Xi Jinping in hopes of getting to the bottom of this. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Extra military surveillance aircraft and ships have been sent to Australia's northern waters to boost border protection efforts. The move comes amid warnings from the Conservative opposition that government changes this week to refugee visas could see a resumption in people smuggling activities. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Since 2013, the Australian Navy has been towing or turning away migrant boats trying to reach Australian waters under the government's Operation Sovereign Borders. The military component of the effort is called Operation Resolute. The new deployment of additional patrol ships and surveillance aircraft comes as the left-of-centre government this week gave about 19,000 refugees on temporary visas the right to stay permanently under new rules. To qualify, migrants must have arrived in Australia before the start of Operation Sovereign Borders. Defence chiefs have confirmed that the military is offering so-called surge support to efforts to deter boats trying to reach Australia's northern territorial waters. Opposition lawmakers said the new visa changes would encourage more asylum seekers to try to reach Australia by sea and would enliven opportunities for people smugglers. Conservative Senator David Vann asked a senior Navy officer about the new Royal Australian Navy, or RAN, deployments at a parliamentary inquiry in Canberra on Wednesday.
Has the RAN been ordered to redirect resources from regional exercises to support Operation Resolute following the government's changes to visa settings?
In response, Vice Admiral David Johnston said the Australian Defence Force, or ADF, is providing additional resources.
The Defence Force generally, Senator, surges as is required to support operational sovereign borders. That is available to the government to employ the ADF in that nature, and we are currently providing surge support.
Operation Sovereign Borders has been condemned by rights groups, but in a new video posted online, Australian Rear Admiral Justin Jones said the strict border protection measures would continue.
Anyone who attempts an unauthorised boat voyage to Australia will be turned back to their country of departure, returned to their home country, or transferred to a regional processing country. If you attempt an illegal maritime journey, you will not settle in Australia. You have zero chance of success.
The Minister for International Development and the Pacific, Pat Conroy, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Thursday that the government would continue to turn away migrant boats.
Our policy is the same as the last government's policy when it comes to this operation. Every single boat is turned back or returned. There is zero chance of anyone coming to this country, settling in this country, if they don't have a valid visa upon entry.
Australia had paid two Pacific countries to detain asylum seekers and refugees who attempt to reach Australia by boat. The agreement with Papua New Guinea ended in 2021, but 60 migrants are still in community detention on the tiny island of Nauru. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In other news, the United Nations has launched a $1 billion appeal to help 5.2 million survivors of the most devastating earthquake in Turkey's modern history. That came 2 days the UN started a $397 billion appeal fund to help nearly 5 million Syrians across the border in the rebel-held northwest. UN spokesman Stephane Dujarric says the Turkish appeal, quote, was designed in very close cooperation with the government of Turkey, which is leading the relief efforts, unquote. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Analysts say last week's disastrous earthquake has shaken the political fortunes of leaders in Turkey and Syria. Some see a possible accelerated path to regime normalization for pariah Syrian President Bashar Assad, while an onslaught of criticism has engulfed Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, calling into question his re-election bid. For VOA, Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
More than a decade of conflict and blocked borders to aid deliveries have hampered access to the rebel-held area of northwest Syria, decimated by the powerful quake from the nearby Turkish epicenter. Turkey has received the lion's share of international assistance to date. The Norwegian Refugee Council and 35 other non-governmental organizations are demanding increased support for Syria's affected areas, saying the humanitarian response must match the scale of the disaster. Syria expert Charles Lister of the Washington-based Middle East Institute said it shouldn't surprise us that the Assad regime is willing to take advantage of a catastrophic natural disaster to serve its own interests, citing Syrian government appeals to the United Nations and aid deliveries from the United Arab Emirates, Jordan, Iraq, and Italy. But he warned against lifting sanctions on the government to further its normalization, spoke to the Italian Institute of International Political Studies.
But the main area of exploitation that we've seen from the regime so far is for its demand for the sanctions relief. There is no correlation between the sanctions imposed on the regime by the United States, the European Union, Canada, or the United Kingdom, and the delivery of humanitarian aid. In 2022, the billions of dollars of aid that flowed into regime areas through Damascus, 91% of that was funded by the four sanctioning entities.
Lister added that we do probably appear to be on an accelerated path toward normalization of the regime, but a lot of it will depend on how the regime responds, whether it is stubborn or more pragmatic as it deals with requests for further aid and how it deals with the governments that continue to press against it. Meanwhile, analysts say Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has come under fire for his government's reaction to the earthquake as the death toll rises in the southwest and affects his chances of re-election. Dorothea Schmidt heads the Turkey and Middle East program at the French Institute for International Relations in Paris.
Erdogan was already in a slightly delicate situation because he has not always been leading in the polls last year. Everybody's wondering whether the popularity of party is going to be damaged by the difficult response to the earthquake. The party is really on the front line to confront the growing anger from the local population.
Schmidt adds that there's a debate whether Erdogan's government is totally unable to cope with the situation, or if any government would be completely helpless given the magnitude of the earthquake. Del Gavlek for VOA News, Amman.
The United Nations Global Fund for Education in Emergencies, Education Cannot Wait, is seeking $1.5 billion to provide educational support for 20 million of the world's most vulnerable children over the next 4 years. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Education Cannot Wait, or ECW, reports 222 million children and adolescents are missing out on an education because of conflict, climate change, displacement, and other crises. It says more than 78 million are out of school altogether, noting that 84% of these children are living in just 10 protracted crises. 8 are in Africa. The UN agency works in dozens of countries on 5 continents. Education Cannot Wait director Yasmin Sharif tells VOA the largest proportion of its budget goes to sub-Saharan Africa.
When it comes to education, 90% of children and adolescents in sub-Saharan Africa cannot read a simple sentence. We are dealing with challenges of this kind, as I mentioned, Horn of Africa. We have the Tigray situation in Ethiopia, the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Sharif spoke on the sidelines of the ECW's annual 2-day conference, which began Thursday in Geneva. She says ECW has provided education to 3.5 million children and adolescents in these and other countries in sub-Saharan Africa.
Our multi-year investments are designed to provide a holistic, inclusive, continued quality education, meaning infrastructure, school feeding, empowerment and training of teachers, protection, water and sanitation. It's the whole spectrum of components that are required to ensure proper learning outcomes.
She says girls' education often lags behind that of boys because of discrimination, gender-based violence, and other obstacles. To overcome the barriers facing them, she says every investment ECW makes in education must include at least 60% girls.
We also make sure that the curriculum and the teachers are gender sensitized, so that you give girls the power to speak up in the classroom, that they are attentive to the treatment of girls, so that we can shape a new generation of girls' leaders.
Sharif says investing in education is the best way to end poverty and to achieve gender equality, as well as peace and security. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
Thwaites Glacier, located in West Antarctica, is considered to be the widest glacier on Earth. Scientists have been watching this so-called doomsday glacier because if it were to completely collapse, global sea levels would increase by over a half meter. Two new and separate studies in the journal Nature explore the melting processes of Thwaites' floating ice shelf, which acts as a dam of a sort that helps slow down the glacier's movement into the sea. The studies suggest that while the melting of the ice shelf has increased, the current rate of melt beneath it is slower than expected. But they also found signs of faster melting in the cracks within the ice shelf. The study suggests that the Thwaites Glacier itself is still rapidly retreating, which means it's losing more water than it is gaining. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis.
Join me and a panel of Washington journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the U.S. response to the Chinese spy balloon that flew across the country and the unknown origin of three high-altitude objects the U.S. shot down. All of this as the world marks the first anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Coming up, a conversation with the CEO of the National Endowment for Democracy, an independent grant-making organization dedicated to advancing freedom around the world. We talk with Damon Wilson, whose experience spans the globe from China to the Middle East to Africa and Europe, about the fight for freedom and democracy. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Junior Dwarf in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and the Philippines have been treaty allies since 1951. Now their alliance is expanding and getting stronger. Earlier this month, the Philippines and the United States announced plans to deepen cooperation under the 2014 Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement. The EDCA, as it is called, is a key pillar of the U.S.-Philippine Treaty Alliance and supports combined training, exercise, and interoperability, and reflects the Philippines and United States' shared commitment to maintaining regional order. The two nations announced that four additional EDCA sites in strategic areas of the Philippines will be added to the five current locations, and that there will be substantial completion of the projects in the existing five sites. To date, the United States has allocated over $82 million toward infrastructure investments under the EDCA, thereby supporting economic growth and job creation in local Philippine communities. During a February 2nd joint press briefing in Manila on the occasion of the visit of Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, Philippine Secretary of National Defense Carlito Galvez set out priority areas for the alliance, including the full implementation of the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement. Secretary Galvez noted his discussions with Secretary Austin to further strengthen our nation's collaborative efforts in addressing pressing security threats in the region, as well as effectively dealing with the natural disasters caused by climate change, a major global concern we need to confront head-on. Secretary of Defense Austin, in turn, emphasized that EDCA is a cooperative agreement that enables rotational activities so that the two countries can respond to collective challenges more effectively. Secretary Austin pointed out that enhanced cooperation, including in modernizing the Philippines' military capabilities, will help to address destabilizing activities in the waters surrounding the Philippines. These efforts are especially important as the People's Republic of China continues to advance its illegitimate claims in the West Philippine Sea. Our alliance makes both of our democracies more secure and helps uphold a free and open Indo-Pacific, Secretary of Defense Austin said. I am confident that we will continue to work together to defend our shared values of freedom, democracy, and human dignity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.